It's a simple recipe, but it would mean so much to me. Turn on the gas and make me feel fine. And all I wanna say is, just give me some hot pizza.
Another episode of Financial Pizza. I'm Steve Siddall. This is the only podcast that brings you clips and more from some of the best financial advisors heard on radio and in podcasts all around the country. And I bring it all to you hot, fresh, and in 30 minutes or less. Something a little bit different this week. Joe Murphy and his show Wealth Health Radio. It's one of my favorite shows that I do every week. Now, Joe brings a perspective and insight that few others can match. So this week, Joe asked if we could do a show that wasn't all about retirement planning, but more about teaching us about something called the petrodollar. Now, according to Investopedia, the definition is petrodollars are the U.S. dollars paid to an oil-exporting country. Petrodollars are the primary source of revenue for many OPEC members and other oil exporters. Oil exporters settle sales in U.S. dollars because the dollar is the most widely used currency, making it easier for them to invest export proceeds. At least that's how it's been for the past 50 years or so. So what's changed, and how will it or will it impact any of us? That is the question that Joe Murphy begins to address in this first of two parts on Financial Pizza.
We were inundated with articles last week about the death of the petrodollar agreement. And we've also seen a lot on de-dollarization and the loss of value of our U.S. currency. So I wanted to take today's show, Steve, and kind of break that down because we have both sides talking. We have one saying, hey, the petrodollar is dead. And what I'd like to do is go through what the petrodollar is, why it's important. And then you have mainstream media saying, that whole thing is fake news. It's not. It didn't really ever happen. But the funny thing is, Steve, if you read the articles that are proclaiming it fake news, when you get to the bottom of the article, they admit that there actually was an agreement. So I'd like to talk a little bit about history. I want to talk about the history of the U.S. currency, how we got to this point in time, and why the petrodollar is important to our country, and how it can impact the economic landscape, especially for our retirees. We've all felt the ravages of inflation. You know, our dollar has lost almost 24% in the last couple years. If this trend continues and we have these external threats, it could be a dangerous situation. But what I wanted to do as a fiduciary, talk a little bit about what we do know, not what we're thinking or a narrative out there designed to sway someone's opinion. I really wanted to break down the history because I think we can all, as educated adults here, understand and connect the dots that need to be connected on our own without someone saying it's this way, it's this way. And history usually shapes a picture for us and allows us to do that. So I want to start, Steve, with talking about what's called the Bretton Woods Agreement. And this has to do with our U.S. currency, our U.S. dollar. And with the petrodollar, and what that is, it's basically an oil-backed dollar. And we have an agreement with Saudi Arabia that is basically on the rocks right now from what everyone is saying. How did we get to this point? Why is the petrodollar important? And why did it start all the way back in the 1940s? So let's talk a little bit about history, Stephen. Yeah, I'm going to break this down and see if we can get some logic and interpretation going here.
All right, I'm all ears.
So we're going to go way back to about 1944, and this was post-World War II. Most of the world was in disarray. There was a lot of rebuilding efforts going on, and we were trying to achieve some type of unification, some type of prosperity. War is an ugly thing, as most people know, and a lot of countries got it a lot worse than other countries, and the United States really wanted to help rebuild Europe. So in 1944, in the United States, actually in New Hampshire, in a place called Bretton Woods, there was an arrangement and there was a meeting. And what this meeting's objective was to create a stable international monetary system, something that all countries could use, could depend on, because we had a lot during back then. There was a lot of country-to-country animosity, and they were almost beggaring each other in currency wars. So the United States says, no, let's bring in the top guys here. Let's put our heads together and see if we can come up with a unification currency system that's going to help create prosperity and unity in the future. Some of the names that were at this meeting, you may have heard, Steve, John Maynard Keynes from Great Britain, and Dexter White. And what they did at this meeting, they ended up establishing fixed exchange rates, and currencies were pegged, which means they were pegged to the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar, in turn, was pegged to gold at a fixed price of $35 an ounce. We've all heard about the gold standard. This was the advent of the gold standard, which
meant—
That's where it started, Steve. And
okay.
Our U.S. dollar was redeemable for gold.
Right.
So instead of believing what our government says, hey, this dollar has value, they created a system that actually had a commodity backing that piece of paper. What did that do? It created a lot of faith in this currency. Immediately, because of this Bretton Woods agreement, we had beautiful congruity. Everyone was like, this is awesome. We catapulted to the world's reserve currency, which means that we were the top of the top. What these guys did, the good stuff, is they created the system. It did create some prosperity. It wasn't the best system over the long haul, and I'll explain that in a second, but it did catapult the United States and give us a taste of the economic power of having the world's reserve currency. It also created some side notes that most people might know. Two organizations that were birthed at this meeting were the World Bank and the International Monetary International Monetary Fund. Got a lot running around in my head
now. I get it. Those are two very unique and I've heard about the IMF, forever.
Yeah. Oh, these are very well known. And, a lot of countries don't like them. They've implemented what's called neoliberalism policies. And they usually go into these countries with loans with austerity, which means that, hey, we're going to give you this money, but we're going to raise taxes. You're going to do it our way in basic. So a lot of these smaller countries that they're going out to help, and this is in every case, guys, it's just a lot of these foreign countries do not have a good taste of the World Bank and the other organization in there because they're promoting a political agenda along with it. So if you look up these two organizations, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, you'll see some nasty stuff about them. But these two organizations were birthed at this meeting. So fast forward, unfortunately, the system didn't last long, and here's why. The U.S. government, with their newfound economic power, all of a sudden got a taste for spending. And Nixon particularly was spending on a lot of social programs and the Vietnam War. So all of a sudden, we couldn't do what we're doing today with quantitative easing and printing money because every dollar was backed by gold. You also had other countries at this time, Steve, that were experiencing inflation. They were having financial difficulties, and they had a run on our gold reserves because they had the right with a gold-backed currency to say, hey, I'm redeeming this for your gold. And all of a sudden, Richard Nixon is like, we're watching our gold reserves deplete rapidly because other countries are panicking. He said, enough with this stuff. He said, we are taking the United States off the gold standard. And that happened in 1971. It's called the Nixon shock. And that's when we were removed from this system. And that is the beginning or the advent of the fiat money system, or what's called free floating, where currencies are positioned against each other, but they're not backed by any substantial commodity. So you couldn't redeem, once we went off the gold standard, you couldn't redeem your U.S. dollar. It was basically the government says this has value. People believe that it had value. Guess what, Steve? It had value. Right?
It had value, yeah.
It had value. So going into this and in looking what Nixon did, they got that taste for spending, and all of a sudden we're going through some tumultuous times in our economy, particularly some nasty stuff called stagflation. Mm-hmm. And long behold, something happens in the Middle East. In 1973, there was an oil embargo. And this was a direct result of the Yom Kippur War with Israel, Egypt, and Syria. And what happened here was the Arab nations, the oil-producing nations, said, we're not selling any oil. Well, the United States is in economic turmoil. We're in a building phase, and we're not able to import oil because the United Arab Nations are sitting on it because they held prejudice and they refused to sell oil to anyone that supported Israel. So it created a lot of shock. Here comes the closer. one of the best Secretary of States, one of the best Treasury Secretaries, Nixon sends Henry Kissinger out to Saudi Arabia, which at the time and still is the largest oil producer in the world. This is where things start getting interesting, and now we're going to start getting in the petrodollar. Before we get in that, Steve, I just wanted to see time-wise how much time we have left.
Maybe 90 seconds.
90 seconds. So before we get into the petrodollar, guys, I wanted to talk a little bit about the background and what this did. So that war really set a chain of events going forward for the United States, for the rest of the world. And what Mr. Kissinger did was he was able to create a deal that ended up generating about 50 years of economic prosperity for us here in America, but also allowed us to extend our power to throughout the globe. So this deal that he made, and I can't imagine, Steve, for one second, and I hate to say this, but I can't imagine Janet Yellen or Anthony Blinken going out and exchanging a deal like this today, although they're trying right now. So it's really interesting. The next segment, guys, we're going to get into what the petrodollar is, how it stands, and what this means if there is no more agreement with Saudi Arabia. We also want to talk a little bit about de-dollarization and the new BRICS countries. So if you've heard a little bit about the BRICS, I'm going to break that down all here on Wealth Health Radio right after this.
How's your video presence?
Do you have one?
Now with your website, with YouTube, multiple social media opportunities, webinar opportunities, the need for a good video presence is critical. But where do you even start? Good thing there's a company in the Triangle that specializes in video production. Quality work, 4 impressive studios, and an experienced production staff. Learn about it. Even schedule a tour. BroadcastingExperts.com. BroadcastingExperts.com. Here in the Triangle.
Now let's rejoin Joel Murphy as he continues the discussion on petrodollars.
And I wanted to kind of pick up where we left off last segment with the closer, Henry Kissinger, going out to Saudi Arabia and the yes. deal that he was able to negotiate for the United States of America. And basically this agreement, which was supposedly secret at the time, said that the Saudi Arabia would only sell their oil in U.S. dollars. Furthering that, Kissinger also furthered the agreement and said, not only will you sell your oil only in U.S. dollars, but any excess dollars that you have, because remember, oil is big money. You know, we're talking about hundreds and millions of barrels of oil being sold. This is not a small drop in the bucket. This was very financially lucrative for Saudi Arabia as well. And when this started, this agreement with the United States and selling this in U.S. dollars, it expanded our power incredibly. And the excess cash that the Saudis have, they were encouraged to invest those excess dollars in U.S. treasuries. So we had two ways going here.
Okay.
So if I'm a country, Steve, during this period of time and I want to buy oil, it means that I have to have U.S. dollars. All these countries now settling in U.S. dollars, our U.S. dollar is going out throughout the world. It's creating a lot of power. And then you have all the excess money coming in and buying U.S. treasuries. And if you're unfamiliar with U.S. treasuries, that's government debt. So as these countries are funneling money to our government, it's an influx of huge cash. What did that cash do? It allowed us to keep interest rates historically low for a very long time. It also allowed us to create an incredible amount of political power and reach throughout the world. It allows us to impose sanctions because remember, if you're holding U.S. cash and you don't do what the United States wants you to do, what can we do? We can freeze your assets. We can impose sanctions. So it created a vacuum of power for the United States. Plus, it masked a lot of the spending. The beginning of the funny money period, Steve, was as a result of the petrodollar because of the amount of global countries that were buying U.S. treasuries and using U.S. dollars. It created 50 years of economic prosperity for the United States. It's a really, really big deal. And being the world reserve currency and having that much power, everything started off really, really good. Everything, and like most things,
well.
Yes, it started well. Unfortunately, some of the Arab countries didn't like the United States looking over their shoulder, did not like the United States telling them what to do. And there's a couple examples in history, and these are not good people. So it's almost like killing two birds with one stone. And the very first one was back in 2000 that many of our listeners will probably remember in Iraq with Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
And what Saddam Hussein decided is, hey, I don't want the United States in my business. I want to be a dictator. I want to do things my own way. I'm not listening to the United States. So he tried to negotiate his oil sales in the euro. And his first deal going away from U.S. dollars, he was a very lucrative deal. Well, what do you think the United States said about that? We're experiencing all this power, all this wealth, all this control. And then all of a sudden you have some dictator in Iraq saying, hey, guess what? I'm going to go outside you guys. Well, immediately that preceded the invasion of Iraq. The United States got to kill two birds with one stone. We got a really bad person off the planet. Mm-hmm. And we got to reinforce the other countries that were maybe thinking of looking around and to say, nope, we're going to stick with the U.S. dollar. It's all going to be settled in
wow.
the U.S. dollar.
Boy, yep. It gets complicated, doesn't it, Joe? Goodness.
It really does, Steve. And another example was in Libya with Gaddafi. So Gaddafi, another horrible person,
yes.
but what he decided to do, he wanted to unite Africa under a common currency backed by gold. He had this grandiose idea, and what he wanted to do was get away from the United States, get away from their control, get away from their power. So he created something called the gold-backed dinar. And as soon as that word started going out, Gaddafi did not meet a good end, and that ended that. And, you know, like, again, these are not good people, but it just shows any threat to a successful system to the United States. And there's always something that you got to look at in the narrative. And our economic prosperity in this country comes first. And they were protecting what the system that has given us all that prosperity. So these two guys went, and they're no longer with us. And that was the United States flexing their muscles, saying, this is our system, this is our agreement, you're not going to go without it. And again, two people off the planet. So all these global countries now basically forced almost, if you want oil for your country, you got to have U.S. dollars. And the U.S. dollar is now, remember, not redeemable for oil. You couldn't just change your dollar bill for oil, but it's implicitly backed but not redeemable. And I think that's a very important distinction.
Very unlike much
so. Yep, unlike the gold standard where you could trade it in, but what did it do? It was almost better for the United States. So what did we do? We started moving our foreign policy. The U.S. started gaining more and more influence throughout the world. We did not want any threats to this deal. And since oil was needed for everything in our world to build, all of a sudden, the excess in the treasuries that were coming in were just massive. And this allowed our government to operate basically without impunity on spending. And I'm not talking about actions or economic. It allowed us to spend larger amounts because of the control. So if you look at some other countries that maybe said, you know, I'm just not buying this U.S. dollar and this petrodollar. What happened back in 2023 with the Russian sanctions? And I think this is really important. What it ended up doing, Steve, is the sanctions that we imposed on Russia, because remember, they wanted to buy oil. And back then with Nixon, remember, we were in the Cold War. And Russia was sitting on a lot of minerals and a lot of oil, but the fall of the Soviet Union, they were disarrayed. So us getting this petrodollar allowed us basically to bypass the Soviet Union during the Cold War. It was a massive win all the way around. And now we're defending it, and we don't want it to go anywhere. So where is the threat, and what is going on with the petrodollar? So you're going to hear, and maybe if you're on social media, you've seen the death of the Saudis have refused to sign the agreement. And then we're getting articles out there from like MarketWatch and Morningstar that are saying this is all fake news. So I'm looking at history, guys, and looking at the economic prosperity that the petrodollar has created for the United States. And if you look just a couple years ago, 3 years ago, almost every single oil trade was settled in U.S. dollars. Now, all of a sudden, fast forward to 2024, and a fifth of oil trades are settled in non-U.S. dollar currency. There seems to be a shift. There seems to be a shift, and that shift is probably to lessen the United States' influence on world policies. Remember, a lot of this stuff, the geopolitical stuff, it can be very complex, and there's so many moving parts. But when you all boil down to it, Steve, what does it really come down to? Money.
Money.
Money. It's all, and if you look to see where the money source is and where it's going, you can usually find your answer. So as I'm researching a lot of this stuff, as an investment advisor, I need to understand what's going on with the world, what's going on with our economy. So as we've been able to mask and use quantitative easing, quantitative tightening, and use this new found leverage that we did not have with the gold standard in this influx of power and wealth from the petrodollar, where does that leave the United States right now? And why are we seeing some of these countries now settle in outside U.S. currency? I think it's a big deal, Steve. And I think that that's why you had a lot of people promoting the end of this deal, whether it was in secret or whether it was real, it is for sure. And the United States gave Saudi Arabia defense. They gave them arms and in exchange for selling this in U.S. dollars. Now you fast forward to today, and that news that came out is the petrodollar agreement will not be re-signed by the Saudis. And then you have these articles in mainstream media coming out saying, it's just all fake news. It's all fake news. And I pulled one in particular that I wanted to discuss. And if you're at home and you got a second, there's an article by Joseph Adolfi, I think his name is, from MarketWatch. And the headline on it is, "Reports of the petrodollar system's demise are fake news. Here's why." And this article ends up going through that this is all fake, this never happened, this agreement was fabricated. And then at the very bottom of the actual article, it says this agreement never existed. In the very next sentence, it says this agreement did exist, although it wasn't nefarious. This was a deal done in good faith between Kissinger and the Saudi kingdom.
So why would it be anything else?
Exactly. And that's where we have to look behind the veil, Steve. And you look at the narratives that are being promoted out there, and you look at fake news. And why would they do that? They don't want panic. They don't want people looking at our currency and our status. Because remember, without all these countries buying all these U.S. treasuries and using the U.S. dollar, that exposes us. It exposes us to high interest rates. It exposes us to higher inflation. When we don't have all this cash free flowing into the country, we're exposed to that in a much greater sense than we were before with that cash. So this is a threat to the United States. And what has the Fed been doing? They are the buyer of last resort. So as China stopped buying treasuries and now we're having less settlement in U.S. treasuries, now the Fed is forced to buy these treasuries. How long can we keep doing that? How long can we keep these rates this low and have the Fed buying these only U.S. treasuries? To me, that's the real crux of the question. And what trick does the United States have up our sleeve to extend the dominance of the U.S. dollar?
And that takes us to the end of part one of Joe Murphy's discussion on the petrodollar. Next week, Joe wraps up the petrodollar discussion, then delves into something called de-dollarization. That's next week on Financial Pizza. Now, there are links to stories about the petrodollar in the show notes for this podcast. To learn more about Joe Murphy, visit mwmfinancial.tax. To learn more about producing your own podcast and more, visit broadcastingexperts.com. I'm Steve Siddall.
Coach P Radio.
Information provided is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. Information has been obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. Neither Peter J. Deruta or his guests are liable for the usage of information discussed. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action. Annuity guarantees are based solely on the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing company. Individuals should thoroughly review the contract for specific details of the product features and costs. Income payments and withdrawals from deferred annuities are generally taxable as ordinary income in the year they are taken.
Money management is provided by Equus Capital Management. Equus is an SEC-registered investment advisor located in San Rafael, California. Investment advice by Capital Financial Advisory Group, LLC, a North Carolina-registered investment advisor. Insurance advice given by Capital Financial and Insurance, a North Carolina-licensed insurance agency.